So today is the November 2nd, the 13th of Cheshvan, 5778, and we are continuing on in Perek Kaf Dalet. We did the last two shirim just focusing on Avigal, so now we're going to focus. It's a long perek, so we're not going to read everything, but we are going to focus a little bit more on David and Naval today. And we're going to focus on some intertextual dialogue going on, which is why in the new packets I gave you, you see all the bolded text in the Hebrew. So before we do that, I realize we never finished Kaf Dalet. I hinted at it a few times, but it's really important that we read it because it's a really important little segment, the last parshia paragraph of Kaf Dalet, and also because it'll be relevant to what we're going to learn today. So let's start out reading that. So this was, David was hiding in the caves, and if you remember, so page one. So if you remember, Shaul went into the cave to relieve himself, and the commentators all focused on the modesty of the way he relieved himself, the way the wording was, and David really could have killed him right then and there, because Shaul happened to go into the cave where David and his men were hiding, and he refused to be responsible for doing anything to the anointed one of God. So it says, so this is the end. Vayik chalot David ledaber et hadavrim ha'ela el Shaul. So David speaks to Shaul, why are you doing this to me? Vayomer Shaul, hakocha ze b'ni David, vayisa Shaul kolo vayefk. So Shaul said, this is the voice of my son David, and he lifted up his voice and he wept. So there are, I think, certain commentaries who would say that, and I think I heard maybe Rabbi Schaefer said, that this was a moment of lucidity that Shaul's having, because he's really sinking deeper and deeper into this paranoia. And
what's the age difference between the two of them, between Shaul and David?
Oh, that's interesting, and it's actually based on a whole chronological debate in the text itself. So if you go, I think according to the most traditional, Shaul died very young, in his 50s. Shmuel died 53, but I think Shaul also is relatively young. And then, contrary to popular belief, David, when he was anointed, was 28 years old. Mm-hmm. So he was definitely older, mm-hmm. but not so much older.
Right. Okay.
And Shaul died soon after Shmuel died. And as we saw, we're going to focus on a little bit today, but Shmuel's just dying now at 53. But that would be good to know the exact ages.
It's like a 20-year difference, though. So that's
It's definitely enough. But Shaul's not some old, feeble man. He's young enough to be chasing after David. So he has this moment of lucidity, and he says, your voice is the voice of my son David, and Shaul lifted up his voice, and he cried. And I bolded it, because this should be pretty obvious of what this reminds us of. Who said, the voice of my son? And then Yaakov and Esav. During the whole, Yaakov dressing up. And then Esav was the one who lifted up his voice and cried. So we're going to have a lot of back and forth in this entire parak between Yaakov and Esav. And it's addressed by Rav Bazak, if you want to go read more of what he says about this. Then Vayomer al David, he says to David, Tzadik ata mimeni, Ki ata gmaltani hatova ve'ani gmalticha hara'a. So Shaul says to David, you are more righteous than I. Who said that before? Anybody remember? Tzadka mimeni? Yehuda to Tamar. Okay? You're more righteous than I am. So in that, actually, this is really tragic. Because when Yehuda says to Tamar, Tzadka mimeni, you're more righteous than I. That is seen as Yehuda having sunk to the lowest low of the way he treated Tamar and the way it was his idea to sell Yosef, and here how he's treating Tamar, he's at his nadir. And then when he says Tzadka mimeni, and he publicly admits that he is the father of this child that Tamar is pregnant with, it's the rise of what would eventually culminate in David HaMelech. And the whole royal line. So for Shaul to be saying this at the end of his life, when, if you've read through Sefer Shmuel, you see all the mistakes he made and all the times he did not own up to those mistakes. For him to have this now at the end of his life is really tragic. I mean, but also good in the sense that he is owning up to it at the end of his life. It's not going to last for very long. But if only he'd had that tzaddik atah mimeni, you're more righteous than I, with the war against Amalek, or with, you know, the initial when he was supposed to wait to do the korban until Shmuel came, and he didn't wait. He went under, and then he doesn't own up to or admit properly these mistakes. He doesn't do proper tshuva. So here he is really doing proper tshuva. And he says, because you repaid me with good, and I've only repaid you with bad. So it's a complete verbal expression of everything he's done wrong. Like, he's really owning up to it. Ve'ata higitz hayom et asher sita iti tova et asher sigrani Hashem bi'adcha ve'lo haragtani. And you're telling me today that what you did with me, this good, that Hashem put me in your hands and you didn't kill me. Yotet, v'chi yimtza ish et oivo v'shalcho b'derech tova. And when a man finds his enemy and he sends him off on a good way, v'Hashem yishalem cha tova tachat hayom haza asher asitali. Hashem should pay you back with good. For what you've done with me today. So this is a really long speech of Shaul, really coming to terms with everything that's been happening over the last several prakim.
But does he get kind of credit for the mafarshim for this tshuva? Because it doesn't last. It's like a very temporary... Right.
Well, unfortunately, it doesn't last, and it's a little too late. But,
too late, I'm not sure. Like, if he really did
Too late in terms of what? Yeah, in terms of, like, his relationship with David, or in terms of...
I mean, in terms of him... really putting David's life in danger several times, you know, like he's really done some really bad things to David at this point.
Yeah, David did also, but when he did tshuva, that's really, you know, accepted because it was a real tshuva that lasted.
Right, this
tshuva is not a...
It's not going to last.
So is it, are the Mefarshim still say this is a great thing or not?
Well, when, before you delve deeply into Shmuel and you hear Shaul, you think a great man. So he's gone down in the history books as a great man, and we're really not allowed to say that he's not. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I think in the way we're doing the shiur, we're exploring some of his flaws, and clearly he had flaws, otherwise it would be the line of Shaul and not the line of David. Mm-hmm. But I think the rabbis do hold him in really high regard. I think so. Okay. Tough, but it's definitely something worth exploring further, and you know, we're not done with Shaul yet. We still have a couple more chapters left of him. And now he goes further even. And now I know that you will surely rule. You'll be the king. And the kingship of Israel will rise up in your hand. And now Vata Hishav Ali Basham. Now swear to me by God, im tachrit etzari acharai, that you won't cut off my seed after me, v'im tashmid etshmi mi beit avi, and that you won't destroy my name and the name of my father. Vayishava David l'Shaul, vayilach Shaul beito, v'David v'anshav alu al hamatsuda. So David swore, and Shaul... And Shaul went back to his house, and David and his men went up to the Metzudah, the fortress. So, I don't know if this is fair to say, but he kind of ruins the moment by making David swear. Like, it's not lishma. Mm-hmm. And it's, And it almost sort of reminds me of after Yaakov dies and the brothers... make up this ruse that on his deathbed he said, that Yaakov said, don't enslave your brothers, because the brothers still think that Yosef is going to do some sort of retaliation with them. I don't know if it's fair to say that. But there's, you know, clearly something going on still where Shaul feels he has to make David swear, even though David has proven time and time again that he hasn't killed him when he's had the opportunity. So, I don't know.
Well, it's like you said, I mean, he did some nasty things to him. Yeah. So.
And also maybe it's an inkling, like he does this amazing tshuva, but there's still an inkling of fear.
Yeah.
And paranoia, which leads to him
Yeah.
leaving that tshuva. So you're getting a little feel of
yeah,
that.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so now pay attention to the paragraph breaks. So we have a paragraph break here, which, as we've seen, doesn't always match up with the chapter breaks. So it is something to point out, even though it's a new chapter, that it's also a new paragraph. But then this next pasuk is its own paragraph about Shmuel dying. So Ve'yamat Shmuel v'yikvetzu kol Yisrael v'yispedula v'yikberuhu v'beito v'rama v'yakam David v'yired el midbar paran. So Shmuel dies, and all of Israel gathers, and they eulogize him, and he's buried in his house in Ramah. And David gets up, and he goes down to Midbar Paran. And then we get into the whole Avigal Naval story. So I think I will just wait to point out some of the bolded things instead of going through the whole thing, since we've kind of gone through it with Avigal. So first we're going to explore the connection between these three things, and if there is a connection, between Shaul doing this tshuva, Shmuel dying, and Avigal and Naval. Mm-hmm. Okay? And even a little bit, Shaul doing tshuva, Shmuel dying, and David changing his position. And then the Avigal and Naval story. Okay, so we're on page 4 with the Radak. So we're going to look at the Radak, Al-Shich, Mitzudah David, who are all medieval commentators. Al-Shich is a little later. I think Al-Shich was in Sfat with Rabbi Yosef Cairo. Radak was a French grammarian in the 13th century, and I think Mitzudah David was around that same time. Sorry, sometimes I include biographical information about everybody. And they all have slightly different takes on how these things are connected, and I thought it was interesting, so I'm sharing it with you. Okay, so Radak, Vayamat Shmuel, and Shmuel died. Sefer Siper Mitat Shmuel, Ki Afshar Shemit Shmuel Bezeh HaPerek, Shenifrad Shaul Midavid, Venit Kaiman Nevoat Shmuel B'chayav, Ki Af Shaul Hodel Melucha LeDavid. So it tells about the death of Shmuel. We're going to see that it's going to tell about the death of Shmuel again. I mentioned that last time, and we'll go more detail into it. But it's possible that Shmuel died right here because he was separated. When Shaul separated from David, and the nevuah of Shmuel was realized in his life because, as we just read, even Shaul admitted to the kingship of David. Okay, so even though Shmuel had anointed David however many years ago, and it depends on all this mixed up chronology, the Jewish people don't know about it necessarily. But here, Shaul, it seems to be known, and Shaul is even admitting, I know that you're going to be the one to rise up for the state of Israel, or the land of Israel. What does it say? Mamlechet Yisrael. So we have that admittance from Shaul, so that therefore Shmuel's prophecy was realized in his life. So Beveito Beramah, so that he goes, that Shmuel goes back, that he's buried in his home in Ramah. Beveito Shaya Beramah, in his house that was in Ramah. So I think that's saying, so you shouldn't think that Ramah is just some high hill, that it's actually the name of a city, Ramah. Kamosha Katuv v'tshuvato haramata, just like it's written in other places, he went back to this place, Ramah. Kisham Beito, because that's where his house is. Ve'od nifaresh mitat Shmuel bepasuk u'shmuel meit. So we're going to talk about Shmuel's death later when it says u'shmuel meit, whereas here it says v'yamat Shmuel. You see the difference? U'shmuel meit, v'yamat Shmuel. And usually, it's actually in this week's Parsha, this grammatical phenomena. When it says v'yamat Shmuel, like it says in ours, it means, and he died. Okay? But the next time we're going to see it, where it says u'shmuel meit, you see the difference? So u'shmuel meit is, and Shmuel had died. So in this week's Parsha, it says, u'pakad Hashem et Sarah. Hashem remembered Sarah, where it could have said, in the more usual way of expressing it, would have been v'yifkod Hashem et Sarah. So Hashem and Hashem remembered Sarah, but it says pakad Hashem. You hear the same word in different. So Rashi there says, it comes right after Avram had once again said Sarah was his sister, and Avimelech captured her, And then God comes to Abimelech in a dream and says, this is the wife of a prophet, and but don't worry, as long as you don't touch her, he'll pray for you. And then it says that Avram indeed prays for Abimelech, and whatever curse had been put on them in the seizing of Sarah, of all their wombs being stopped up, is opened, and they're all able to have children. And then it says, Upakad Hashem at Sarah, and Hashem had remembered Sarah. So Rashi there, it's the famous Rashi, that if you are in need of something, so they were in need of fertility, and you daven for somebody who needs the same thing, Abimelech and his household, then you will be answered first. Okay? And this comes from...
Sounds like a ploy.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a ploy. But, and this comes from the language of the grammar. Hashem had remembered Sarah, meaning even prior to Abimelech's household being healed. Okay, so those are the two different things. But in any case, that's not really what Radak is focusing on. So Radak is saying, why, if we mention it there, do we also mention it here? And it's Ledat Hadrash. I'm sorry, so he doesn't go into more details. I don't know why I included that, I'm sorry. Okay, but the Al-Sheikh. So the Al-Sheikh says, Vayomat Shmuel v'ikvatsu kol Yisrael. So Shmuel died and all of Israel gathered. B'midrash, in the Yalkut Shemoni, which we're going to see, Amar Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani. So Rabbi Shmuel bar Nachmani said, Hakol softim b'tofchim b'mitat tzadik. Everyone is eulogizing and crying out with the death of the tzadik. V'zeh harasha oselo mervachim. And this rasha, meaning naval, and in the midrash itself it uses a different word than mervachim. It's a, I think, marzichim, yeah, which I think is proper, which when I looked up marzichim in Hebrew, it gave the definition as pub, which really is a pub. He's going out and making a drinking party. So because he's out at the sheep shearing festival. So everyone else is eulogizing Shmuel, and Naval is out celebrating his sheep shearing. Okay? So that's the contrast. That why do we mention the death of Shmuel right here when we're going to repeat it later? To show that the entire nation's in mourning, and he's out celebrating. Okay. Yuraki balatet kesher el pasuk ze im she'acharav. So therefore, the reason why I mentioned Shmuel's death here is to give a connection to the pasuk that comes after it, about Naval. But we still have to make a connection between the end of the pasuk and its beginning. And it's possible to say that while Shmuel was still alive, David had faith that he and Shaul were both the anointed ones by Shmuel. And therefore, in his merit, David felt protected that Shaul would never succeed in actually doing harm to him. Even when David was close to where he was. Ach ata, but now, shene'adar Shmuel, that Shmuel is missing, v'lo tagin zchuto, and his merit would not be a protection from him, alkein v'yered al midbar paran. And therefore, David had to change positions once again, from the Mitzuda to midbar paran. So the Al-Sheikh is giving those two connections. One, the death of Shmuel to Naval's drinking festival, sheep shearing, and two, Shmuel's death to why David has to change positions. Okay, in Mitzuda David, Vayered v'chule, David went down to Midbar Paran. Ulai derech Midbar in Gedi hayu ha'anashim holchim v'shavim lispod et Shmuel u'pachad pen yimtza'uhu mi me'an she Sha'ul v'lazeh halach misham l'midbar Paran u'lechach samchu l'mitat Shmuel. So Mitzuda David is given a much more strategic explanation that by virtue of everyone coming down for the eulogies and the burials, David, and this was by way of En Gedi, that David felt he'd be seen by some Shaul supporters, and therefore his life would be in danger as a result of Shmuel dying and the eulogies going on, and so therefore he had to move. Okay? So we see the Radak brings it all the way back to Shaul's admission, and now Shmuel can die because he's seen his prophecy realized in his lifetime, to bringing the death of Shmuel and how all of Israel's eulogizing him to the behavior of Nabal, and also the death of Shmuel and how everyone's eulogizing him to David's need to move position again because he might be seen because everybody's congregating in this area. Okay, so now we're going to see the Yalkut Shimoni Midrash that gives a lot of details into this. So, V'ketiv v'ik baruha baramah ubiro. So it's written, they buried him in Ramah, in his city. V'chi in anu yodim sh'aramah iro. Don't we know that Ramah is the city? If you read through, you see that it's repeated several times that that Shmuel is from Ramah. Ela milamed shesvado kol Yisrael b'iro k'derech shesvado lo b'Ramah. It teaches us that all of Israel eulogized him in his own city, just as the way that they eulogized him in Ramah. So the Iro doesn't mean Shmuel's city was Ramah, but rather that everybody in his own city was mourning for Shmuel. V'kativ, v'yamat Shmuel, u'Shmuel meit. So these two different ways of saying he died. V'samich le le'ish b'ma'on u'ma'aseh u'b'karmel. And so here, it's interesting, if you see on the text, it's corrected, because the other text says u'Shmuel meit, and our text says v'yamat Shmuel, so they had to correct it. It must have been a correction. So this is right next to starting the whole Naval story. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so Hashem said, HaKol Tzavachim V'Tovchim Al Mitato Shel Tzadik. Everyone is crying out for this, the death of the Tzadik. V'Harasha Hazeh Yoshev V'Osem Arzichim. And this evil man, Naval, is sitting and doing his drinking party. L'lamedcha, to teach you, SheKol HaKofer B'Gimilut Chasadim Ki Ilu Kafar B'Ikar. Anybody who is uprooting with acts of loving kindness. And what's the ultimate act of loving kindness? Taking care of the dead. So he's denying that. Well, eventually, it's as if he denies in all of the statutes of Judaism. Okay, so it's just going on again, the evilness of Naval. Okay, and then there's a bunch of other stuff. You see the ellipsis, but back to relevant for us. V'yan Naval et Avdi David v'gomer. So Naval answers the servant David. Amar klum hu batuach etzel ela al shnei tipin shemashchu Shmuel. So the reason why Naval is so chutzvedik to David, even though it appears people know that he's anointed, is because he says he's so sure of himself because of two drops of oil from Shmuel. That's how he puts it. And where's Shmuel now? And his drops. That's how he says it. V'heichan Shmuel, v'heichan tipav. Where's Shmuel and where is drops of oil? Okay, so just to give you a bigger picture, and then one more thing from the Yalkut Shimoni, and this is relevant to the intertextual dialogue that I've been hinting at as well. Amar Rabbi Simon, so Rabbi Simon says, Hu Naval, Hu Lavan. His name is Naval, but if you interpolate the letters, he's Lavan. Lavan haya ramai, af Naval haya ramai. Lavan was a trickster, so too is Naval a trickster. Okay, so now, if we say that Naval is Lavan, and he's the evil sheep shearer, okay, who's the innocent shepherd? Who are the two innocent shepherds now that we have to have in mind? David, obviously the innocent shepherd, right? And who else? Who's the shepherd to Lavan? Yaakov, right? So we have Naval in the place of Lavan, which makes David in the place of Yaakov, always being tricked and not being taken care of. And it even goes on that, you know, Yaakov married Lavan's daughters. David is going to marry Naval's wife after they separate, of course, for 3 months after he dies. So you have a lot of those similarities there. We talked about the sheep shearing, that both cases, the sheep shearing, there's even Rav Bazak brings in a little similarity that 10 days later, after this whole incident, is when Naval dies, the text tells us, and Yaakov runs away for 7 days, and after 3 days, Lavan finds out. So really, it's not 7 plus 3, it's 7 days, and then the last 3 days of those 7, Lavan is catching up to David. But Rav Bazak said it, you know, it is also a similarity of 10 and 7 and 3. So you have David in the role of Yaakov, okay? And we've seen that there's a lot of commentaries, even with Shaul, putting Shaul in the role of Lavan and David in the role of Yaakov, because it's a similar situation there with, and we're going to see at the very end of this pasuk, in fact, look at it now, the very last pasuk. So Mem Dalet, sorry, it's its own paragraph again. V'Shaul natan et Michal bito eshet David lepalti ben Laish asher migalim. So Shaul gives Michal, his daughter, the wife of David, to Palti ben Laish, to another man. And it's a whole conversation. How could this have happened? And were they actually married? And what's going on? So you still see hints of Shaul in this Lavan position, which makes us very uncomfortable because we don't want to see Shaul that way. But he puts himself in that position all too many times in the way that he tries to deceive David. Okay, so David is put in this Yaakov position. I just want to spend a little more time on this, and then just to give you a little hint, we're going to see that it's not so simple, and based on the other foreshadowing we saw, that there's also a sense of David not just being compared to Yaakov, but also being compared to Esav, and that this is a crossroads for David. And you can, even if you think back to our shir on Avigal and what Avigal does for David, you can see how close David could have been to turning into Esav in that moment. Okay? But not to give it all away. Okay, so now I want to focus on another pasuk where Naval says, they ask Naval if he'll provide provisions for David and his men. So it's pasuk Yud. David, Naval's response. So Vayan Naval et avde David. So how does Naval answer the servants of David? Vayomer. And he says, Mi David umi ben Yishai. Who's David and who is Ben Yishai? And he's like, I don't know this guy, I'm not gonna give anything to him. Okay? And that's when Avigal then has to get involved. So let's just look. Okay, so back to our sources. I think I may have jumped the gun with that pasuk, but it's okay. So in the Talmud Yerushalmi, so we're at the top of page 5, Ha Naval Atimin de Klobi. So this is talking about Naval's genealogy, that he comes from Kalev. Amar Naval Leit B'Yisrael by Tavin Sagin B'Yisrael. So Naval is saying, I'm the one who should be king. I'm a direct descendant. I'm a proper birth, okay? This is what's meant by V'ish b'ma'on maseo b'karmel V'ish gadol ma'od. This was a really great man. V'hu kluvi da'ate min kluvi. That he came from Kalev, and he's rich and he's powerful. And now look what this amazing midrash says. It's from Otsar HaMidrashim. And it's talking about Yeshua, salvation. So it's a whole braita on salvation. Okay? And it starts out, Tnu Rabbanan, the rabbis taught in a braita. Esrim v'arba devarim marchikim et Yeshua u'marichin et hakes. There are 24 things that distance us from the ultimate salvation and lengthen the end of days. Okay? And Eluhen, he lists them all. And then number 5 is harodef achar srara, the one who chases after power. Minayin, where do we find that chasing after power distances us from salvation? Minaval haKarmali, shehaya Naval v'haya mibeit Kalev. So Naval was this great man. He was from the house of Caleb, Mishevet Yehuda. Shenemar v'ish b'mon v'Karmel v'ish gadol od. V'amar Naval leit bar tavin segin minai. And Naval said, "There is no greater man than me," just like we saw in the Gemara in Yerushalmi. U'kishabau nare David l'sha'el v'shlomo. And when the young men of David came to ask for his shalom, ask how he was doing. And you can see, I actually, I bolded the word shalom. It appears a lot of times in Sukkim, Hey, and Vav. I think it's 5 times in those verses, in those 2 verses. So David really has shalom in mind. Shenemar ve'amartem kol lechai ve'ata shalom ve'itecha shalom. This is how David's asking that everything should be in peace. Umahu lechai k'chai l'kayam shalom. And what is it to live and exist in peace? This is peace. Miad, immediately, vayan naval et avdei David. Naval answers the servants of David, V'yomer, right, so I didn't jump the gun. Mi David, umi ben Yishai. Who is this guy? He doesn't respect him back with Shalom at all. Sheya rodef achar shvara, because he was chasing after power. V'lo haya choshev adam elahu, and he didn't think anybody was worthy except for him. And then, at the end of the whole story, we have it was after 10 days that Hashem plagued Naval, and he died. And from here you learn that anyone who chases after honor distances himself from the salvation, because he dies. Okay? So it just added a new dimension to why Naval is so rude to David, and which you also see hinted at in the brothers and Yosef, you know, story going back. Okay, so Rashi, Mi David, Mihu Chashiv Sheiten Lo Et Sheli, Halo Miruta Moaviyaba. So this adds another dimension. Who does this guy think he is that I'll give him anything of mine? He's from Rut the Moabite. If you were with me, or if not, you can imagine that David's lineage from Rut created all sorts of problems in people accepting him as the king. In fact, we learned that when he was anointed, Shmuel went. He knew he had to go to Yishai's house, and that from one of his children he'd find the anointed one. And he thought, for sure, it's this son. He's tall and handsome, just like Shaul was. And Hashem says, no. And then this son, no, no, no. There's seven sons. All of them, no. And Shmuel says in the text, don't you have another son? Is this all? Which is weird. Like, when the Navi comes to your house and says, gather all your sons, you gather all your sons. Why is one missing? So he says, oh, he's the shepherd. So we learn in a midrash that Yishai felt like maybe none of his children were legitimate because he was descended from Ruth, and you can never marry a Moabite, which we learn from the Torah Shel Baal Peh means a woman can never marry a Moabite man, but a Moabite woman can come in. And so Yishai was going to divorce his wife, who we learn in this midrash, her name was Nitzavet. And actually in the Gemara we also learn her name was Nitzavet. And he had set it up so that he would have relations with a handmaid. So, and then the handmaid would convert after she was pregnant. And this would give Yishai a legitimate Jewish child. Okay? It was like a loophole. The handmaid goes running to Nitzavet and says, we're all going to go to hell, literally. Look what your master is making you do. So they devise this plan that she's going to pretend that she's into it. She's going to go turn out the light and shut the door, and they're going to switch.
Also Yaakov.
Exactly, exactly. And she gets pregnant and gives birth to David, but nobody knows that there is this switch. Mm-hmm. And so they think he's illegitimate, but for whatever reason they don't kill him, but they make him be the shepherd, which was not a nice job. I spent a lot of time teaching why it wasn't a nice job in those days. Rambam even says you shouldn't shepherd somebody who is a shepherd for small animals, can't be trusted with being a witness. So we thought we'd solved all that. And then if you know anything about Doeg, who's this evil guy who's on Shaul's side, who gets David into trouble, he also is questioning who he is. So it keeps coming back, and Naval is like the last holdout. It's sort of like the last of the birthers, right? Yeah. I'm saying, you know, like he's the last holdout. He's still questioning. David comes from Rut. He wasn't born a Jew. So that's what Rashi adds to this. Like, he's beneath me. He comes from Rut. I'm a powerful, legitimate Calebite, you know, from Yehuda. I should be the king. Okay. So then what this also reminded me of, although it wasn't exactly the same language, I was disappointed, but I decided to bring it in anyway. When Moshe and Aaron come to Paro and say, God says, let us go. Paro says, you can see the pasuk from Shmot Perkei, pasuk bet, Vayomer Paro, mi Hashem. Paro says, who's this for tetragrammaton ineffable name of God? Who is this, Asher Shema Bekolo, that I should listen to his voice, l'shalach et Yisrael, to send out Israel. Lo yadati et Hashem, v'gam et Yisrael lo ashaleach. I don't know this guy, God, and I'm not going to send out Israel. So you can see how it is reminds me of it. Okay, but then we do find the exact language of mi v'mi with David himself, which is really amazing. So it's in Perek Yud Chet. When Shaul suggests after David kills Goliath that Shaul should marry his daughter. So David says, Vayomer David el Shaul, Mi anochi umi chayai, mishpachat avi b'Yisrael, ki ayachatan lamelech. Who am I and who is my family that I should be the son-in-law of the king? So David says about himself, and now Naval is saying it about David, but when David says it about himself, we're struck by his humility, and when Naval says it about David, we're struck by his stinginess and evilness. Okay, so now we have, this is just an interesting little epilogue to the whole Naval, Avigal, David story. So, and it comes from Parshat Toldot, so in a couple weeks. Avram holida Yitzchak, Avram sired Yitzchak, Amar of Yitzchak, Ein lecha dor she'ein bo leitzanim b'sha'at. So there is no generation that doesn't have its mockers. We're living through that now. Okay. V'sha'ah she'gazaz Naval tzono. So at the time when Naval was shearing his sheep, shalach David et narav etzlo. So then this midrash, in stating Avram sired Yitzchak, and in stating every generation has its mockers, goes into the whole story of Naval and David and Avigal. Okay, and then it continues that 10 days later, Naval dies. And we're in the middle of the paragraph. Vayishlach David vayidaber ba'avigal l'kach tala li'isha. David sent for Avigal and said he wanted to marry her. U'lachar shehivia, and after he brought her, Peresh David mimena shlosha chadashim. David separated from her for 3 months, okay, to discern whether or not she would be pregnant from Naval. And I mentioned this last week or 2 weeks ago. Kedei leida im haita meuberet min Naval v'im lav, to know if she was pregnant from Naval or not. Le'achar gimel chadashim, after 3 months, ba'ala v'nita bram himenu. After 3 months, he was intimate with her, and she became pregnant from him. V'hayu leitzanei hador. And there were mockers in that generation as well. Melitzin ve'omrim min Naval hi meuberet. And they would say, she got pregnant from Naval. Ma'asa HaKadosh Baruch Hu. What did Hashem do? Tziva ha-malach ha-mimuna al yitzirat ha-vlad. He commanded the angel that was appointed on the form of the fetus. It's just an interesting notion. I never came across that before. Ve'al tzorato. On the creation of the fetus, sorry, and his form. Ve'amar lo, and he said to him, lech v'tzar oto b'dmut David. Go and form him in the dmut, the appearance of David. So that it would testify to everybody that David is his father. Minayin, from where do we know that? Shekein Kativ, because it's written in Shmuel Bet. Vayhi bechoro Amnon l'Achinoam ha-Yisraelit. So his firstborn is Amnon from Achinoam the Jezreelite. U'mishnehu Kal-Ev. And his second son is Kal-Av. La'avigal, to Avigal, Eshet Naval HaKarmeli, the wife of Naval HaKarmeli. Maltu Modlomer Kal-Av, why is he called Kal-Av? Shaya Kulo-Av, Kol-Av. He was entirely his father, meaning David. Shaya Kulo-Av, Shekol HaRo'e Omer David Aviv Shalza, that anybody who would see him would say that David is his father. V'chein Avram Haya Domel LeYitzchak, and so too Avram was similar to Yitzchak. And nobody could tell the difference between the father and son. And that's actually very relevant to what I just told you from this week's Parsha, because it was so close to the time that Sarah was captured by Avimelech that she then became pregnant from Avram, so the mockers would say, Avimelech is the father. So it's very relevant to what I said before. Okay, so nobody could tell the difference between father and son until Bikesh Avraham, Avram requested V'amar Ribono Shalom, and Avram davened to God, Hafresh bein av lebein, separate between the father and the son, V'hifresh beinehem hazikena, and he separated between them and the elderly, L'chach ne'amar, V'Avram zaken. And therefore, it says later in the story, and Avram grew old. So that's why he grew old, because to separate between him and his son. And that's also why it says Avram holid at Yitzchak. Because if you look at that pasuk, pay attention in Toldot, it's a repetition there about Avram siring Yitzchak to show you that they look the same and that Avram was definitely the father. Okay? So that's clear. Okay, so now just to point out a little bit of the intertextual dialogue. So in so this is the Yosef story. That after the brothers bring Binyamin back and they're treated so nicely, and then Yosef puts the goblet into Binyamin's back. So this is from that parak. Ham yatsu etayir. They left the city lo hirchiku, and they hadn't gone far. VYosef amar la'asher al beito, and Yosef said to those who were in his household, kum radof achrei anashim, go and chase after these people. V'hisadtam, and they captured them. V'amarta alehem, and he said to them, lama shilamta ra'ah tachat tova, why did you pay back evil in place of goodness? And in Shaul's speech to David, he says, you've given me goodness in place of evil. So it's just reminding you of this. And also keep in mind, the reason why this intertextual dialogue is important is because Shaul is from Binyamin and David is from Yehuda, and Binyamin and Yosef are the children of Rachel, and Yehuda, children of Leah. So we have this constant tension going on between these families. And this moment with Shaul and David is really a reconciliation of the two families. That, you know, it's taking the words of Yosef when he's pretending to be angry and trying to create this reconciliation, and he's fulfilling that reconciliation between the two of them. Okay, another one. Oh, this was when Yaakov sends Yosef out to his brothers. Vayomer lo, he says to him, lechna re'e et shalom achecha, go and see the shalom of your brothers, ve'et shalom hatzon, and the shalom of the tzon. So this repetition of the word shalom that we also saw between Naval and David, that didn't go so well, and also didn't go so well there. Okay, and then it's just interesting because when David goes out with his 400 men, what does 400 men remind you of? Esav and his 400 men, okay? 200 of them stayed back with the luggage, which is really weird. So it says, V'yashvu al hakelim, they sat with the luggage. Shaul, when he was meant to have this public proclamation of him as the king, was also hiding in the luggage. And I don't know what to do with that, but it was too good not to include. So I don't have anything for you on that, but I had something about the luggage, okay? And then now going to Yaakov and Esau's reunion, when he sends all these gifts to all of them. So if he calls it, so it's on the top page 6, Kachna et birchati, take my bracha. That's how he calls his gifts, Asher huvat lach, that was brought to you. And then if you look at Pasuk, if you can find it before me, bracha should be bolded. Yes, it's Kaf Zayin. Abigail says to David, when she brings all these gifts for him, V'ata ha-bracha hazot asher hivi shivchatcha, this bracha that your maidservant, and also note that Yaakov calls himself a servant all the time in reference to Esav. So Avigal's giving David a bracha, a gift, and calling herself her maidservant the whole time. Yaakov is bringing Esav a gift and calling himself his servant the whole time. So you see we're making this parallel between David and Esav. And then even the way that Avigal goes after her maidservants and Yaakov goes after all the people bringing the gifts, that's in the next section. You see that parallelism there. And so we're really setting up this situation of David and Esav being the similar ones. And then you can see why, based on our previous classes, David is so, so grateful to Avigal for stopping him from being Esav. It's so much deeper than just stopping him from killing Naval. He's at a crossroads in his leadership where he could have chosen the Esav path, or he could have chosen the Yaakov path, and he's sticking, thank God, with the Yaakov path. And then just to one final source that really puts this in perspective from Bereishit Rabbah. So one other parallel between David and Esav is they're both the only redheads in the Tanakh, okay?
Shimson
is. Oh, is he a redhead?
I just thought he was a redhead.
Maybe. I don't know if he's called. They're so Admoni. So they're both called Adom. Okay, Esav comes out red, right? And David is called Admoni, it's funny, we translate usually as ruddy. So the English translation separates that similarity between Esav and David. Okay, so Amar Rabbi Abba Bar Kahana, ki ilu shofech damim. So what does it mean that David was ruddy, Admoni? As if he spilled blood. V'kevan shera'a Shmuel et David Admoni, And when Shmuel saw that David was reddish, d'chtiv v'yishlach v'yaviu v'hu admoni, because it says there Shmuel sent and brought, they brought him and he was admoni. Shmuel takes note of this. Nityara, he was afraid. V'amar afseh shafech damim ke'esav. This one is going to spill blood like Esav. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem said to him, im yafeh einayim. No, David also has beautiful eyes. He's not just red, he has beautiful eyes. Esav midad atzmo hu horeg. Esav took it upon himself to kill people. Aval zeh midad Sanhedrin hu horeg. This one will only kill with the agreement of the Sanhedrin in a lawful way. And that, now you understand what Abigail did for David. She didn't just save him from the blood of killing Naval or the blood of impurity. I think we can add a third on one. She saved him from the blood of Esav to keep him on the straight path to become the great leader of Am Yisrael. Okay. Thank you.